Our TikTok is blowing up, by the way, and by that I mean we're starting. But I'm very happy with our output so far. You should check out our TikTok, the Greg Cody Show. We're gonna have some fun on there.
I think we have 3 ticks up there right now, don't we? Is that what you call an entry on TikTok? It's called a tick.
You just did, so we're doing it.
Okay.
This is the Greg Cody Show with Greg Cody.
Pardon it.
Here's your host, Greg Cody.
Okay, well, I want to start with something that is universal, something that involves all couples worldwide deal with this at one time or another. It doesn't matter your age, race, ethnicity, same gender or different, married or not. If you're in a couple relationship, you have dealt with this issue.
A couple relationship. Okay?
That's right. Now, the three of us represent different stages of marriage. I've been married forever, since the 80s. Christopher got married in 2017. Yeti, you're somewhere in between. How long have you been married?
13 years in October.
Okay. So that's a big one, 13, by the way. So here's the issue. Restaurant boots, same side or opposite sides? Because I have strong feelings about this, and this is something that your mother and I, Christopher, dealt with on the very first, not the first date, but early in our relationship. We went to a restaurant. I think it might have even been a Pizza Hut. And she sat down first, and I sat down on the same side of the booth.
Wow.
Thinking that's, you know, I'm being a little romantic.
I know. Yeah, you're thinking, baby.
Yeah, baby. I want to make a good impression. For some reason, I thought that's what she expected or whatever. So I did that.
She didn't say
it. It took a long time.
She didn't say anything to you in the moment, did she?
No.
Like, get on the other side. What are you doing?
Yeah, she didn't. Because like I say, we barely knew each other at that time. You know, I think our only other quote unquote date had been with another couple in the campus Rathskeller or something. So this was our first date, just the two of us. I was nervous. She was polite, didn't say anything, but much later, much, much later, she told me how weird she thought that was. Now, how do you two feel about that?
Yeah, I'm with mom on this. I've never done that. The only time I would ever allow something like that is if you're at one of those monstrosity of a booth that has like half booth, half two chairs.
Right.
Then I want to be on the same side, because we both deserve to sit on a booth, because we can all agree a booth seat is much better than a chair. So
I definitely prefer the boot half.
Wow.
That's for sure. Yeti, how about you?
So I tried this once, sitting on the same side with an ex-girlfriend of mine, and she, in the
classic Greg,
in the moment was like, what are you doing? It's like, I thought it would be, you know, like romantic or whatever. And it's funny. I had never tried it with previous girlfriends. And yes, I did have at least 2 girlfriends prior to this.
This girlfriend just gave off same side of the booth to you. So you were like, you got vibes. That's what she wanted, but you were wrong.
No, that would be giving way too much credit for trying to read the vibe. This was just, you know, I have an idea in my head. This might be romantic, so I'm going to try it out. And I failed miserably. So she shamed me in that moment into never trying that again. Now, what about when you're with a couple?
Oh, then, yes, of course. Yeah, when you're with a couple, you have to.
See, actually, the funny thing is about this is interesting, I think, is when it's a booth, you always sit next to your spouse. But if it's a table, it changes the dynamic. I've sat, like, with my wife's twin sister and her husband. We go out to dinner. I've sat at a table, like, next to my sister-in-law and next to my brother-in-law different times, and that's allowed. But in booths, it's always like you sit next to your spouse.
That's true. And there's also a different dynamic in a car. Like when two couples are going to a restaurant, we go out a lot with this particular couple. And for some reason, the other guy drives and the two women sit in the back and I'm in the front with the other guy. That's a weird dynamic to me.
No, we do that too. I think that's women usually like, you know, men are like, you know, bulkier. So like, you know, the man gets the more spacious area and the women. That's like the way like my wife and sister-in-law will do that as well. But they're like small. So like it's like you guys can sit up front and we'll sit in the back since the back is smaller.
If you ask me, I prefer to sit beside my wife. If you ask her, she's probably like, give me a break. You know, can I have some space? Let me hang out with
plus like that. That is friend, if it's a double date, usually like you're paired off, like, you know, like the wives talk, the husbands talk, you know.
Well, this subject came up because your mother and I, Christopher, were at a restaurant the other night, and we're doing our opposite sides thing. And I'm on the side where I can see the booth next to us, where it's a couple with their backs to us on the same side.
Yeah.
And so I'm getting to see the dynamic in play. And it's so weird because you're both people are facing forward, eating their meal. And then when they want to talk to each other, they both have to like swivel their heads awkwardly, yeah, you know, to talk to each other. It just doesn't make any sense.
I think it's a trait of young couples, not young in age, like early on in a relationship, like young in the relationship.
Yeah.
I think like it's like a first 6 months, like I'm really into you. Let me hold your thigh as we order this food.
Right.
Let me feed yeah, you. Exactly. Let me feed you a piece of bread.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, you know
let
what I mean?
Let me hold your thigh, and you're talking about like the chicken thigh on her plate, so you can eat it, right?
Oh yeah, both thighs.
Right. Exactly. And another thing, we'll get off this topic in a minute because I could talk forever about this. But another related topic is the whole holding hands thing. Like your mother and I are not hand holders. You know, we're walking as independent people. We're close to each other, but not holding hands. And I even said to her once, should we be hand holders? You know, we like analyzed this, and she's like, no, it's fine. Don't worry about it.
Me,
you know.
Me and my wife will like, I'll grab her hand. Sometimes she'll grab my hand, but it always lasts like 10 seconds. And then we have this thing where we squeeze. And like when we squeeze, it's kind of like, all right, enough of this.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of like when the other one feels the squeeze, it's like, all right, we're letting go now.
I hear you.
I love the hand holding, but my wife is a little different. It kind of depends on the weather. Sometimes it's just too hot. And other times, like in the winter, it's cold and she wants to put her hands in her pocket. So it really just depends on.
Eddie, I'm catching vibes of you that you have definitely put rose petals down a hallway before or upstairs for your wife.
Maybe not down a hallway. Maybe not upstairs. Maybe somewhere else.
All right. That's what I mean. So, but I'm rose petals.
Eber.
Rose petals have been purchased.
Yeah. I'm the hopeless romantic of the couple for sure. Yeah. For sure. Yeah. Now, Chris, have you ever had a mix up with the twin? Like,
baby.
Have you ever accidentally like, grabbed your sister-in-law's hand or something?
No. There have been times where we're like out at like a bar like years ago, like at a beer pong tournament, and like I'll come out of the bathroom and like they won't be facing me, and I'll like walk up and it's like, oh, and then like I have to realize, oh, wait, that's not her. But right. Early on in our relationship, I literally had to ask my friend which one was which, because I had just met them.
Right.
And her sister has like a beauty mark on her face. So it's like, that was my cue. But now I can like tell them apart in like baby photos. But
yeah, yeah. I can tell them apart now. But I remember the first time I ever met Christy's twin, I think we were in a pool hall shooting pool or something. And
Paul,
I totally could not tell them apart. I mean, I think I went up to Christy and called her Corey or something.
Classic twin mistake.
Exactly. And as our dismount before we introduce the show and move on, I want to say that I sent your mother red roses for birthdays and special occasions, anniversaries for decades of our marriage before she ever told me that red roses were the only rose color she didn't like.
Wow.
And so, you know, she prefers the yellows and the pinks and the mixes, but the red rose to her indicates a funereal sort of a deathly thing.
Okay.
And so it would have been nice if she had told me earlier, but...
Are we doing a podcast?
You know what? Let's bring on
this.
A special guest. Let's just have a special guest because this guy I've known for decades, speaking of which, I've known him almost as long as I've been married. Because I covered his Miami Hurricanes from 84 to 88. He's the Hall of Fame coach, Jimmy Johnson, the only man who has won a major college national championship and a Super Bowl. Pro Football Hall of Fame this coming weekend is his enshrinement, which is a word that always sounds funereal, like red roses, enshrinement. I think that's kind of a creepy word to have for it. But his name is Jimmy Johnson.
And in the spirit of the Olympics, we are competing for the podcast Olympics medal. We're trying to get a medal in the competition of oldest podcast in terms of average age of everyone involved. So Yeti and I will not be taking place in this because we want to have like a nominee for right. that medal. So we will not participate here, and we will submit this to the podcast Olympics in the following weeks.
That could be, because I'm up there and Jimmy's older than I am. I was surprised to learn that just a couple of weeks ago, in fact, he turned 78. I couldn't believe it because he looks great.
Are you about to learn this? Are we about to learn this in the interview?
No, I don't bring up his age.
Oh.
But you know, people, everybody knows Jimmy because he's on Fox NFL Sunday. You know, putting up with Terry Bradshaw for the last 20 years, and I think we have a great interview because in addition to talking football, we talk about his other passion in life, a real passion, which is fishing. He goes out on his boat and just gets away from it all. It's great. Yeah. So
I just thought you were going to do that thing where you like say every single thing in the interview.
No, this is called teasing an interview,
which you almost just did.
That's why if you heard me at the end there, Yeti, I was like just literally jumping in, like, okay, all right, yep. Now please stop talking.
Well, you know, I have a high-priced production staff.
And you know how you you're teeing up this interview right now? And I know I just interrupted you. I interrupted you. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you're an interrupter.
You tee up. You're teeing up this interview. You're like one of those guys who tees the ball up 6 inches off the ground. Like that's what you're doing now when you're teeing up this interview.
Right. It is a big tee. I will say that. Edit out whatever you don't like.
Leaving it in.
In meantime, here's the great, the one and only Jimmy Johnson. Real honored to have this next guy on. I feel like everybody knows Jimmy Johnson from the past 20 years on Fox NFL Sunday. And of course, the Hall of Fame coaching career with the University of Miami and the Dallas Cowboys and later the Dolphins. He's won everywhere he's gone. And Jimmy, thanks a lot for being on with us.
Well, good to be with you, Greg.
You were inducted into the Hall of Fame last year, but the ceremony was delayed. So you finally get the whole enshrinement ceremony this coming week. And we're going to talk about that before long, because that's fascinating to me, how you found out and what your emotions are going into this week. But first, I want to talk to you about something else, because I've always known you to have a few great passions in life: football, family, and fishing. And I'd like you to talk fishing a little bit, because I know when you hop on that boat, it's like another world, and it's become a real passion of yours. What's a fishing day like for Jimmy Johnson?
Well, you know, fishing for me, you know, at least half the time I go out by myself, and it's relaxation. It's so peaceful out on the water. I grew up in Port Arthur, Texas, right there on the water. Mm-hmm. A big vacation for us was to go to the beach and pull a seine, or maybe even be on the boat. So, you know, always being around water, I love the scuba diving. I love the fishing. I love just being out there. And like I said, it is peaceful. And I go by myself, you know, mainly because, you know, if I'm out there by myself, there's no pressure to catch any fish. If I, you know, entertain people or take them on the boat, then I feel like I'm kind of obligated to catch a big fish for them.
Right.
And so, that's why I go by myself. The other thing is I don't like to wait on people. I'm a very impatient person.
Right.
And so, you know, I normally get up 4:30 every morning, and, you know, I may go out before daylight. I'm usually on the water by daylight, and I don't like telling people we're going to go at 6:30, and I'm pacing the, you know, back and forth about 5:30 waiting on them.
Right.
You
know? Yeah. Sure.
So I go by myself.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure when you were holding a team meeting, if the meeting began at 8 a.m. and you got there at 7:55, you were late, right? I mean, you wanted your guys.
That's
there.
That's the way it was. Everybody knew that. Once I closed that door, they weren't coming into the meeting. And in fact, even when I was with the Dallas Cowboys, I know I irritated the owner, Jerry Jones. He tried to get in the locker room one time with Prince Bandar, and I'd already closed the door.
Right.
He's banging on the door to get in so he could hear my post-game speech. And once they walked in with Prince Bandar and his big entourage, I just looked at him, and I looked at the team. I said, good game, and I walked off.
That's hilarious. I remember something you said once, speaking of those days. You were talking about how all players are not created equal, that if Troy Aikman falls asleep in a meeting, you nudge him awake, and if the third-string long snapper falls asleep, he's probably off the team.
Yeah, well, I think that's the way it is in business or with any organization. You know, I always told the players, I said, I'm going to be very consistent. I'm going to treat every one of you differently. And how I treat you is if you do everything that we ask you to do, if you meet the rules and regulations and the guidelines, and plus you're a good player,
right?
I'm going to cut you a little bit of slack. But if you don't meet the rules and regulations, if you know, you don't do what we ask you to do and you're not a good player, then, you know, you better not mess up, because if you mess up, you're not going to be around here. And that's the way it is. You know, if you're in charge of a company, it, your top salesman comes in a little bit late one day, you're going to tell him to, hey, be on time tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's somebody there that's not contributing to the organization and they're continually late, you're going to find you a new salesman.
Right.
It's simple.
It's human nature. Yeah. Jimmy, I want to get back on that boat for a minute, because it interests me that when you go out by yourself, what you're fishing for is sort of relaxation and solitude as much as actual fish, right?
That's exactly right. And the byproduct is I do catch a lot of big fish.
Right.
And so I'll come back and clean the fish and clean the boat and vacuum seal the fish and put them in the freezer. So it gives us a little bit to eat.
Wow. So you do all that yourself? Like, you don't hire anybody to clean fish and all that?
I don't hire anybody to do much of anything.
Man, I tell you, you, and I know you're not retired because, you know, you're doing Fox Sunday NFL for the past 20 years or so. But as far as football is concerned, you retired right. You got out clean. Once you quit football, you never went back. You live what seems like an idyllic life in the upper Florida Keys, and you hop on a boat. I mean, life's good for Jimmy Johnson, right?
Yeah, life is good. I mainly retired, you know, because of my family. I'd spent so little time with my two sons, and one had really struggled. And then, you know, when I was with the Dolphins, my mother passed away.
Right.
I actually, you know, flew to the funeral, and Wayne Huizenga was nice enough to let me borrow his plane to go to the funeral. Yeah, you know, I just, you know, it was a realization that, you know, I'd missed so much family time.
Yeah.
And since that time, I've spent a lot of great hours and days with my sons, you know, Brent and Chad, and they're doing fantastic, by the way.
Great. I'm glad to hear
and,
it.
And so it's been good family time for me.
Yeah. That's terrific. What do you fish for, by the way? I barely know which end of the rod to hold. I am not a fisherman. I would love somebody to bait my hook. I mean, I'm totally not a fisherman. So what do you catch out there? I'm curious.
Oh, you know, I was out yesterday and caught a mahi, you know, what they call dolphin down
nice.
Here. But, you know, I'll catch tuna and I'll catch occasionally. I'll catch a wahoo, which I really enjoy catching. You know, they're big and powerful and as fast as any fish in the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
But I catch about whatever gets on the hook. I don't like to catch sailfish because they tangle up my lines.
Oh, wow.
And I have actually caught and released 5 blue marlin fishing alone.
Wow.
And, you know, 250, 300-pound blue marlin. And then I have these fishing tournaments too, Greg. You know, I've got the one JJ's Fish Week there, which has been tremendously successful. We have given out over $10 million in prize money.
Wow.
Then we just had one in Atlantic City. Michael Jordan's fished in it the last 3 years. The winning fish was a 679-pound blue marlin.
Good Lord.
Michael Jordan's team actually came in third at that tournament.
Wow.
And so, you know, I've been involved with the fishing tournament as well.
Wow. That's what's the biggest fish you've ever boated?
Probably about a 350-pound blue marlin.
Wow. Now, Jimmy, when you catch and clean and store fish like that, do you actually cook them, or you're over a fry pan, or what?
No. My cooking is about like my hiring of people. I don't cook. My wife does the cooking.
Okay. How's she doing, by the way?
Rhonda's doing great.
Great.
Yeah, she plays her pickleball, and I do a little bit of fishing, and so we have a great relationship. She's my best friend.
That's terrific. Yeah, yeah. Jimmy, one thing I've always admired about you, and this has been consistent as long as I've known you, and I've known you since 1984. I covered UM football for those 5 seasons you were there, and it was I consider that to be the big break in my career. I was in my late 20s, I think, when you came to Miami. you're a man who doesn't hide his emotions. I mean, you know, after a big win, you're not stoic. You show it on your face. And I've never known any coach at any level who took losing harder than you. Didn't you once tell me that the losses, something to this effect, the losses hurt more than the wins make you feel good or something of that nature?
Well, without question, you know, the losses, you know, like, yeah, if I think back about my entire career, you know, of course, we had a great run at University of Miami, but yep. We lost two regular season games in 4 years, the last 4 years, and playing a national schedule. I think the last 2 years at University of Miami, we had like a dozen teams that were in the top 20. So it was we were on national television every other week. That was a great run. But, you know, when I think about that, the game that sticks out is the game that I, you know, did a poor job of coaching. When we lost to Penn State and lost the national championship, we had a much better team.
Yes.
You know, they made one first down the second half and about 150 yards. And we had like 450 yards.
Yeah.
I like I said, looking back, that's the game that stands out. But you know, we turned the ball over. And if you turn the ball over, you're going to lose. I think it made me a better coach. Losing that game because I didn't lose another one, you know, at University of Miami.
Yeah, I was at that game covering it, and it was 14-10. And I guess the reason it hurt so much is that that may have been the best college team I've ever seen. You had all over the roster, there were guys who were going to be playing Sunday the following season. And it was just a great team. But you won a championship at UM. You won two Super Bowls. First coach to ever win both a major college national championship and Super Bowls. And you won in Miami, and some of the drafting you did in Miami set up that team for years, including Zach Thomas and others. So the Hall of Fame merit that you've earned is so deserved. And when I bring up you being an emotional guy, Jimmy, I've never seen you more emotional than I did on January 12th of last year of 2020, when mountain of a man, David Baker, turns the corner live on the Fox set and surprises you like that. And you were fighting back tears, and the tears won that fight. Can you just relive that moment, that minute when he came out and you suddenly knew you were in the Hall of Fame?
Well, Greg, you know, I had an idea that I might go into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. A lot of the selection committee had called and said, you know, hey, they thought I was going to be in. Right. They didn't know for sure. And obviously, I didn't know for sure. But, you know, I thought if it was going to happen, Dave Baker would have come out during the pregame show.
Mm-hmm.
And when it didn't happen in the pregame show, well, I was thinking, well, maybe later or, you know, in the week, or maybe I didn't get in.
Right.
And so our producer, Bill Richards, who is the only person that knew it was going to happen, told me, he said, Jimmy, you know, at halftime, I'd like for you to talk about the Seattle defense and the Green Bay receivers. I've got a video here.
Right.
And we had 35 million people watching that particular game.
Right.
It was a playoff game. And so, you know, I'm thinking about what I'm going to say during that video. I watched the video. We were getting ready for the halftime. And obviously, if you got 35 million people watching, you don't want to screw up. And so right. My mind was on the Seattle defense.
Sure.
And so when David Baker walked out, you can't miss him. He weighs about 450 pounds.
He's a mountain.
He walked out. You know, I just stopped breathing. And so, you know, the guys were going crazy. You know, they knew what was happening. Terry Bradshaw was jumping up and down. He's my best friend, him and Nick Christen.
Yeah.
And Howie Long, he looked over and said, hey, do you need your inhaler, you know, because of asthma? You know, and Tony Gonzalez, everybody was just so excited. And so, you know, David Baker, you know, asked me about being in the Hall of Fame, and I couldn't get words out because I wasn't breathing.
Yeah.
But when I did get some words out, the first words were, the thought that came into my mind was the great assistant coaches and the great players that I coached.
That's what you mentioned first.
And that's what it was. You know, when I went in the College Football Hall of Fame, you know, maybe I had something to do with assembling, you know, those players and coaches, but they won the games. Then I went in the Broadcasting Hall of Fame. Well, in the Broadcasting Hall of Fame with Terry Bradshaw, Howie Long, Michael Strahan, Menifee, Jay Glazer. I mean, there's a reason that, you don't do any of these things as an individual.
Right.
And then with the Pro Football Hall of Fame, I coached, recruited, or drafted 13 players in the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Amazing.
I worked with, either coaching or broadcasting, 14 more
right.
that are in the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Sure.
So that's the thought in my mind, is that, you know, I have been fortunate, and maybe I had something to do with it, but I've been fortunate to be around a bunch of great players and great coaches over my entire career.
Right.
And they're the reason that I was able to receive some accolades.
Yeah. And not to mention, you also had the opportunity to work with Miami Herald columnist Greg Cody, which had to be just such an honor for you. when are you in the Fishing Hall of Fame? Because you're in every Hall of Fame. You have to be in the Fishing Hall of Fame, right?
I don't know. I've received some awards, and I've been on some magazine covers for fishing. But I don't know about the Fishing Hall of Fame.
Okay, well,
I haven't set a whole lot of records there.
Well, we're gonna start that campaign for you, because you've brought good publicity to the sport of fishing. Speaking of that, have you ever been on a boat and something scary has happened, whether it was weather related, whether it was just an intense fight with a fish, anything, particularly when you're by yourself? It could get hairy out there, right?
Oh, I'm pretty soft, especially in my later years. If there's white caps out there and the wind's blowing, I don't go.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
So I always go in great weather. And so, you know, never really had any, you know, scary moments. Now, when I first started captaining the boat by myself, my wife Rhonda and I, you know, we had, I think it was like a 40-foot main ship. And, you know, we decided we were going to go to Bimini, and the waves picked up and it was bouncing around, and I would have been fine, but she's looking at me all saying, "Hey, are you sure we can make this?"
Right.
And it was the first time I'd ever captained, you know, the ship, you know, going across. And I went about halfway and I turned around, came back, you know, but never really had any real scary moments.
Jimmy, how long did it take you to write your hall and induction speech that you're going to give in a few days?
Well, really not very long, because, you know, I've been to a few of these things before. And of course, I presented Jason Taylor when he went in the Hall of Fame, and then
right.
of course the College Hall of Fame, which last about 6 hours, you know, with all their acceptance speeches. Mm. And yeah, you know, there's a couple of things there. You know, I told Troy Aikman, who's going to present me, I said, you know, it'll be the shortest speech in Pro Football Hall of Fame history. Because, you know, first of all, they all start thanking everybody in the world. And I started coming up with a list of all the people I needed to thank, and I couldn't do it. There's no way. We had been there all night for me to thank yeah. all the people that's helped me in my entire career.
Sure.
And the other thing is that, you know, they wanted to scroll all the thank yous at the bottom of the screen, which they're going to do for a lot of the inductees. And I said, no, I'm not going to do that. And I said, if people are more interested in see if their name is on the bottom of that screen, you know, they're not going to be listening to me.
Right.
And so there won't be a whole lot of thank yous in my speech. I'm just going to talk a little bit about my family, and then it's going to be thank you, and I'm going to sit down.
Jimmy, can you put into words why the Hall of Fame meant what it does mean to you? It may be obvious, but I wonder how it compares with other career pinnacles, with winning championships, for example.
I used to say that the most fun time of my life was my 5 years at University of Miami.
Yeah.
And it was that way for a long time.
That was a wild ride.
Obviously, you know, winning back-to-back Super Bowls, you know, that was rewarding as well. You know,
mm-hmm.
But really the most fun time of my life has been right now. I have a great relationship with my family. I have a great marriage. I have a great life. I've been trying to retire from Fox NFL Sunday for the last 10 years, and they won't let me retire. And so, you know, that's my friends.
Right,
know,
right.
I really, you know, Terry Bradshaw and I, we'll sit there in a suite, you know, out in Los Angeles, and we've got three TVs set up. We'll watch college football all day Saturday. And Kurt Minifield come over with us, you know, and so, you know, it's just a great time. You know, then we do the show. You know, we've been doing the show for so long, you know, we don't really have any rehearsal. Everything's ad lib. But we have such a great relationship with each other. You know, somebody can screw up a word, mispronounce it or something, Strahan or whatever, whoever, and we can bust each other's chops the rest of the show and just have a ball.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's really a great group.
Yeah, I mean, you can't fake that kind of chemistry. And when you watch Fox NFL Sunday, it's obvious that you guys are tight, that you do that. You know, and it's wonderful to hear. That's why it's been such a success. Jimmy, because of the pandemic, you did that show remotely last year. Are you going to be back in the studio this year?
Yeah, I talked to him. I said, listen, I'll give you three options. I said, you can save some money on the budget and I'll retire. You know, they said, well, that's not an option. We're not taking that one. I said, okay, well, I'm not coming to L.A. every week. They said, well, how many times will you come? And so we've kind of worked out, you know, our top ratings is the OT and when we have doubleheaders.
Right.
That's our big games, America's Game of the Week. And, you know, there for quite a few years, I didn't stay for the OT. In fact, I just did the pregame show and I came home. And so I said, listen, I'll just go out. Since I'm going out there, I want to watch all the games anyway. I'll do all the doubleheaders and I'll stay for the OT. And in the single headers, I'll stay here at home and we'll have a camera set up here and I'll do the show from here. And so they agreed to that. And so I'm still on Fox NFL Sunday.
Excellent. I would love to see you do that show from your boat, you know, with a rod in your hand. You're in the middle of catching a big fish while also discussing the game with Bradshaw. That would be fun. Jimmy, before we let you go, and I'm so appreciative of you being on with us and allowing us to catch up. You're the only human being on earth who's been a head coach of both the Hurricanes and the Dolphins. And I'm curious, when it comes to the Canes, they got to find a way to get over that Clemson hurdle if they want to get back to where they want to be. What kind of a job is Manny Diaz doing, do you think? And how do you see the state of the Canes right now?
Well, you know, Greg, in all honesty, it's going to be difficult for them, you know, to look back and say, okay, like it was, you know, there, you know, in the 80s or 90s, you know. I mean, we were an independent. We played a national schedule. You know, nowadays, every game's on TV. Back then, there was one national game, and then there are a couple of regional games. Well, since we had a national schedule, you know, every other week it was either Oklahoma or Michigan or Florida State or South Carolina, you know, on and on, you know, all these teams that we played back then. And so we were on national television about every other week. So we were able to recruit some great, great players. And, you know, the big thing is we won all those games.
Yes.
And so, you know, it's I think it's going to be hard now. Every university around, you know, they're on, you know, TV every week. And so it's a matter of collecting talent. You know, that's what wins. I realized how much talent we had at Miami when I went to Dallas, and I realized that my Miami teams could probably beat the Dallas Cowboys.
Right.
Because Tom Landry was a great coach, but he had three straight losing seasons and they were 3-13.
Yep.
And so, yeah. I think Manny's doing a good job of getting talent. I think, you know, from everything I understand, they're recruiting extremely well. I think they're a well-coached team. I really like, you know, what they did last year, especially offensively, and I think the defense will pick up. So, you know, I like what he's doing. I'm pulling for him 100%. He's been down here a couple of times with his staff, and I've visited with him, and I'm in his corner all the way.
Right. Did you have Manny out on your boat or no?
No, we talked football more than we did boating.
Okay. Jimmy, on the pro side of town down here, the Dolphins have completely retooled in the past couple of years, building from the ground up with draft picks. Now at the helm, Brian Flores and Tua Tagovailoa. How do you see the state of the Dolphins?
Well, I like what they're doing. I Chris Greer and Brian Flores had me there a couple of years ago, talking to their coaches and their scouts, you know, talking about acquiring talent, what I was looking for in talent. And I was extremely impressed. And I have talked to Chris a couple of different times over the last couple of years. I think they're doing a tremendous job. They got draft picks. They were able to make some trades. They were doing some things that I would have done. And so I think they're doing a great job. I think they're an extremely well-coached football team.
Excellent. Is there one type of fish that you've never caught? Is there something out there that you wish you could pull into the boat that's just eluded you for all of these years?
Nope. Nothing's out there that I want desperately that I hadn't caught.
Okay. Jimmy, we'll let you go now. And I want to tell you personally, it's a great honor for me to have you on. I know you don't do a lot of podcasts and you've been an important part of my career. And I really thank you. It's good catching up with you.
All right. Thank you, Greg. Enjoyed it.
All right. Stay well.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Real Cream!
Hey, cool cats! Tired of suffering from prolonged virginity? Want to attract the kittens like a fancy lad? Well, a little dab will do you, and two will do you double. Brill Cream! Guys, put your hands on your tube and squeeze. Brill Cream! Dabbing it!
Brill Cream! A little dab will do you! Brill Cream! What's the matter to you? Fancy lad must always look so debonair! Brill Cream! A little dab will do you! Brill Cream! What's the matter to you? All the ladies love a lad with Brill Cream. Brill Cream.
I feel like I'm always just the jerk on this show, but I just want, like, did Jimmy Johnson really mean that much to you in your career? Like, were you just kind of, you know?
Well, the Miami Hurricanes in 84 to 88, when they were one of the talks of college football, a national team, a championship team, that was my first major beat. So that was the first time I was covering a team that I really felt like the whole country was interested in some way. And he was a very colorful coach, wore his passions on his sleeve and on his face, and it was very bold. Outspoken. Yes. He was great. I really enjoyed the hell out of covering him. So happy to have him on. Philip Bailey, the lead singer of Earth, Wind, and Fire, is no longer the only Hall of Famer who we've had as a guest on this podcast. Have to talk about Simone Biles for a minute because for withdrawing, she's the talk of the summer games, in my mind. And it's disgraceful to me that she's gotten a lot of criticism from people who've called her a quitter when she's withdrawn largely because of mental health issues. And I think she deserves all kind of empathy. Anybody among you two want to call her a quitter?
I do not want to call her a quitter. I mean, it's just crazy how, you know, you have the people holding up, like, who was it? What was the girl's? It was a Carrie Strug.
Right.
With the ankle. Like, that's the thing you see, but it's people just don't appreciate mental health as being that type of injury. And like, I just don't understand the criticism of her. It seems pretty weak.
Yeah, I don't get it either. We all have a stage that we operate on. And sometimes I, even with my spouse, with my wife, I have to tell her, hey, like, you know, I've been going through some stuff this year, and I've had to tell her a couple of times this year, I'm not with it today, you know, and she has to carry more of the load that day. And she's had to do the same with me. And that's the stage I operate on. At work, it's at my day job, it's, I'd rather lose you for a day than have to lose you for a month because you didn't take care of yourself, you know? And so it's that same mindset. Her stage just happens to be in front of the whole world at the Olympics. Either way, it's the same, you know, when it comes to sometimes we can't perform our job. And so I appreciated her willingness to say, not today. It can't happen.
Isn't it just crazy, though, that she is capable of getting essentially, it's called the twisties in gymnastics, of just essentially the yips.
Right.
Like where she like the greatest we've ever seen at this is just can't just is like in the air and like losing her balance. And it's just like, it's like crazy that it's like the mental games of like, you know, these sports where you're alone, man. You know what I mean? Like, I know they're a gymnastics team and they are a team, but these sports like golf and tennis where you're alone with your thoughts. And it's just insane, like how crazy the mind can be at like just ruining everything.
Yeah. And that sport in particular, I was saying that the other night. I'm watching this woman from another country do backflips on a balance beam, which is 4 inches wide. And imagine the pressure of doing backflips on a beam that narrow. And you could, you know, really break your ankle and fall and do something catastrophic. And
you on a balance beam is a funny visual. I mean, oh me God. Too. I mean, all three of us. I'm not like,
can we get that for TikTok?
I'm not. Yes. Oh. By the way, our TikTok is blowing up, by the way. And by that, I mean, we're starting, but I'm very happy with our output so far. And you should check out our TikTok, the Greg Cody Show. We're going to have some fun on there.
I think we have 3 ticks up there right now, don't we? Is that what you call an entry on TikTok? It's called a tick.
You just did. So we're doing it.
Okay. Hey, NBA free agency is underway now. And in Miami down here, we're going to be
not
hearing...
but it's not as crazy as MLB trade deadline. I just want to say that.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I know Max Scherzer is a little bit beyond his prime now, but the Dodgers getting him, to me, that's the big deal of free agency, right?
I mean, I'm kind of looking at it through the Marlins prism, which is a prism nobody wants to look at it through. So, you know, the Marlins made a lot of moves, but yes, that obviously it's not fair what the Dodgers are doing. Like, I don't understand. That rotation is sick.
It is. They have 3 pretty great teams in that division. The Marlins, though.
I said that rotation, didn't I?
But in the division, they also have. the division both is are sick. Accurate.
Rotation is sick and the division is sick.
Right. But the Marlins, in one fell swoop, trade away their best hitter, Starling Marte, who's had a .307 average, and their leading slugger, Adam Duvall, who has, 22 home runs. It's the white, they're waving the white flag, you know. I mean,
well, but
they can,
this team is not good though, so it's like,
no, they're not.
What are they punting on? They're trying to reload with prospects, like
they are.
That's
why
I'm seeing Marlins fans on Twitter like freaking out, like this is a big thing. Like, oh, were you really attached to Adam Duvall? Like, even Starling Marte, he's a good hitter, but if he's your best guy, you're not that good. So it's like,
that's true.
Like, to me, as long as we keep and we're recording this literally in the middle of the trade deadline. So like these guys could get moved after we record. But as long as they keep Sandy Alcantara and Jazz Chisholm, those are the only two guys to me that like I see like all-star potential.
Well, you know, nobody questions that they are raising good young pitchers, particularly starting pitchers. But they need more than Jazz Chisholm. Yeah. They need other homegrown bats. Yeah. And one of them, supposedly a replacement for Marte, could be JJ Bleday, the outfielder. I checked today and he's batting .199 in AA, so he doesn't look like somebody who's ready for MLB right now. So I think the Marlins are going to be good in a couple of years.
Richard Bleier, also untouchable, my high school teammate.
I've actually been more interested, more so than the moves the Dodgers made. I was more shocked at what the Cubs are doing. I don't know if you can. It's interesting because I've actually not paid attention to what they're bringing back in. I just the all I saw yesterday was Anthony Rizzo, and that felt weird. Like, I'm not a Cubs fan.
Yeah, it's the end of an era.
But but to see him go, it reminded me back. I could relate because, you know, growing up a Braves fan. Dale Murphy was my first hero, and he was never supposed to leave. And when he went to the Phillies, it broke my heart. So
I don't know if Anthony Rizzo's on this level. I mean, I guess I know the last like 8 years, he's like he. If when you think of the Cubs, you think of Anthony Rizzo. Right. So I'm with that.
Yes, and that's the thing. The Braves were terrible in the 80s, man. They were really bad. But whenever you thought of the Braves, you thought Dale Murphy. And then when he left, it was just now they of course went on their wonderful run of, you know, division championships after that. But still, like, it's just weird to see Rizzo gone. And who else did they get rid of?
Well, like, once again, we're doing this like as the Javi Baez deal is like being done. So I don't know if that's official yet, but Javi Baez was going to the Mets, I believe.
Yeah. It feels like they've given up on the year too, and are just trying to find a way to reload.
One of the great things I love about sports is that it seems like there's more movement now, more trades, more big free agency moves. I mean,
that's probably not true.
Oh, I think it feels like it is to me.
I think we say that every year, though.
No, because in addition to what normally happens every year, you now have athletes feeling empowered and forcing trades, like, you know, the James Hardens. And so now, you know, you have Westbrook with the Lakers and free agency.
That's exciting. I'm excited about that. I like Russell Westbrook. I'm excited to see him play on a good team again. He was being wasted in Washington.
He really was. I have read that he's a weird fit with the Lakers, but to me,
Just because he can't shoot, right. And that, like, you want to put shooters around those two. But he's so good, man. He's a triple double machine. Like the way he gets to the rim. I know he is older. His game's not going to age, but that's just exciting to me. Like, and it's actually a perfect thing because I don't want them to be that good that if like the Heat ever get good, that we can beat them. But it's like, they'll be interesting, which is what we want. We don't want them to be so great. Like if they got Bradley Beal, I'd be like, shit, they're going to win the next four titles. Russell Westbrook is like, not that great that like, it's just an interesting piece that I'm happy that they're good with it.
Yeah. And speaking of guys who don't shoot that well, Ben Simmons is available, and the Miami Heat reportedly are one of a few teams that have a shot to get him. I would take him.
Jimmy Butler basically like hated him. Like he's the reason that he hated being in Philly. Like that. I know I've seen those reports too, but it's just makes zero sense.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't want him on the Heat. Not at all.
So we want Beal or Dame. We want Lillard or Beal. Is that correct?
Oh, give me Dame all day.
Yeah. Let's have both.
Why not? Let's get everybody. Can we get 90s Michael Jordan? Let's go. Sign him up.
Are you getting out there with the take that Bradley Beal and Damian Lillard would really improve the Heat team?
I am. That's my take of the week. I don't think anybody else has said that or thought it. I mean, but I'm announcing it right now that if the Heat get Bradley Beal and Damian Lillard to combine with Adebayo and Butler and his coffee company, the Heat win the championship. There's no question. I guarantee it. How about that?
What do you think Jimmy Johnson's doing after, like, right after that interview? Like, what do you think he's doing right now?
You know, I think he's saying to his wife, Rhonda, Rhonda, I love Greg Cody so much, and that had to be the best interview I've done in decades. He has this southern drawl that I can't imitate.
He needs a cigarette, basically.
And that's right. He's orgasmic with joy.
Isn't there some real old song you always used to sing with Rhonda in it?
Help me, Rhonda. Help me get her out of my heart.
See, as soon as I heard Rhonda, I was like, this brings me back to my dad embarrassing me with a song in public.
What are you talking about?
I'm saying when I heard you say Rhonda, I was like, I picture my dad singing that song terribly somewhere.
Yeah. Well, you should, because I have, and you've heard it. I'm one of these people who...
You're one of
the bad
boys,
but yet sings anyway.
You're one of these people that likes to always say, I'm the kind of guy, and I'm one of these people. That's the kind of people you are.
That's true.
Greg Cody, man of the people.
That's an homage to my late great friend, Alan Cherry, who said, and the phrase that kind of thing is also Alan Cherry. Thank you, Alan, RIP. And so was I'm the kind of guy.
By the way, keep up the decal requests. Dad, give the address.
Oh, no.
My dad is regretting doing this secretly because of how many requests he's getting, so it's turning into a lot of work for him, and we want to amp that up. Okay. So we want to keep it coming. We want more. If you've been thinking about it, do it, because we want more and more of these, so my dad has to keep spending his afternoons packing mail.
Actually, we don't. This is taking hours out of every day for me now. And
keep it coming.
No.
Give the address. Look, we got to go.
No,
we got to
no,
get
no,
out.
No, No, we're not giving the address anymore.
Go back to previous episodes. Listen, find the address. Sell more.
You can do
that.
Ramp it up. I can't prevent you from doing that. But I'm a stat freak, and so I want to give you a couple of stats here. We've given away about 400 decals so far. Almost 200 fans of the show have called in from 37 different states and Canada. You'd expect Florida to be number one, but the outpouring's been crazy. We thank you all, Pod family. Come back, keep listening, subscribe, rate, review, like, whatever the hell you do, keep doing it. Thank you, Portugal, Philippines, Dominican Republic, Croatia, and Israel, in addition to the grand USA, for supporting us so much this past week. See you next week. Bye-bye. Help me, Rhonda. Help me get a ride of my heart. Boom, 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 boom. Help me, Rhonda. Help me, Rhonda. Ooh, help me, Rhonda. Help me, Rhonda. Ooh. Thank you.